Listeners, we have a Guten Prank for you. Joining us for our final episode, it's Micah Sargent. Hey, Micah, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me for this final weepy episode. Well, I guess two episodes, huh, of The Office. I am honored to be here.
Can't believe you came.
That's what she said.
That's what she said. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we have Micah back. If you've listened to our show from the very beginning, Micah was the OG co-host. And so it just feels right that we're all together for this final episode. I can't believe it's here.
I know.
You two have been, you know, doing the show for quite a while now, and it's kind of wild how many episodes of The Office there are, and you have faithfully and steadfastly continued to talk about the show, and I think from the reactions that I've seen, get even more people into the show than maybe have been there before. And Stephen, I thank you for joining TIFF and continuing on to create the show, because despite the fact that I had to leave the show because I was incredibly overwhelmed with work and everything that was going on, I'm really proud of the fact that Tiff and I kicked this off, and that I will never not be proud of the show artwork that was created for the show, for sure. And then for the show to become what it is and to shape so much of like the thoughts that I have about The Office around it is amazing. There's the excellent thefinergifs.club website where you can get GIFs from The Office anytime you want to, created by a listener, and then also handing out Dundee Awards to people. I mean, it's just been so much fun, and I am pleased as punch that we're about to tie a bow on it.
Yeah, if you don't know, listeners, Micah originated the idea for this show. Originally, he wanted to do an Office rewatch show, and he asked me if I, you know, wanted to one day maybe be a guest on his show that he was thinking about doing. And I waited an appropriate amount of time to see if he was going to do the show, because it was like his brainchild, and it didn't come together for you. And then all of a sudden, I was like, you know what? I'm going to ask him if, instead of being a guest, if I can co-host this show with him and get it off the ground, because I was so excited about even the prospect of doing this show. So this is Micah's brainchild. And it's almost like, so the writer of this episode, Greg Daniels, he also, you know, wrote the pilot and everything and originated The Office here. And so it's kind of like that, Micah, having you back. Right?
That's amazing. Yeah, I like that.
You're bookending this thing like you should.
Oh, that's great. I like that.
So we are here talking about the episode finale, which is season 9, episode 24 and 25, originally airing on May 16th, 2013. And yes, it was aired together. And originally, it was supposed to like end on the 200th episode. But because the episode before it ended up being extra long, they like added in extra stuff. So they ended up, I was like actually reading about it this time. I found some more information. And so they added on to the previous episode, extending the production code to add another episode. And then this one also went extra, extra long. They had like a whole petition out to have an extra 15 minutes of The Office for this episode. And so this also got a second production code. So it is the 200th and the 201st episode of The Office.
I'm so used to watching shows that are 30 to 45 minutes that, or even sometimes an hour, that as I was clicking to watch these two episodes, I thought, how are they going? I remember in my brain that they did a pretty good job of buttoning things up, but how in the world are they going to squeeze this into two 20-minute episodes? And yet somehow they managed. Oh!
Wow. Good. That's good. Yeah. And what's remarkable about it to me is that this episode isn't as dense as some of the previous episodes in this season. I mean, a bunch of episodes that Tiff and I have talked about over the last couple of months have been extremely packed, like no downtime, no free second. You can't look away. And this episode feels remarkably well paced, and there's very clearly a couple of different storylines, and they don't really even bounce back and forth all that much. It's just straightforward. This is what we're going to do. And I think it serves the finale very well. I think that this episode, being structurally relatively simple, there's kind of two things going on. There's the 1 year later, where are they now kind of thing with the documentary, and there's the wedding. And Jim managed to make those happen on the same weekend. And it's kind of nice. I mean, when I sat down to watch this episode last night, I was like, okay, like, the, you know, several times in season 9, I'm like, okay, I need to like get my notes and like get everything ready. And it's like kind of exhausting to watch it for the podcast because there's so much going on. And this one, the pacing is nice. And I think that I think like Micah, like you said, this does a very good job at wrapping up a series that we all love so much. And, you know, if I was to make like a pros and cons list for this episode, like, I don't think I've got anything that I would change. Like, I guess I'm kind of spilling the beans here at the top, but I absolutely love where this leaves everybody.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me, as a kid, I can remember there's a park in my hometown, and every year for the holidays, they decorate the entire park and with lights, and it's gorgeous, and there are all these different sets, and you drive up and you drive through the entire park looking at the lights with everybody else. And there's a tunnel that everybody honks their horn in. There are all these little traditions that take place while you're there. And these last two episodes, it felt like I was riding in the car with the wedding and the reunion and all of the little notes, like Kevin getting fired and Phyllis finding a new Stanley. Those were like little installations, little light shows as I'm driving through. So we had this main kind of through of the story, but you just get these delightful little bits kind of thrown in. And so I agree, the pacing, it felt very relaxing, and it was... Sometimes there's fan service that is over the top and you just kind of get annoyed because it's almost cloyingly sweet in its abundance, I guess. And this didn't feel like that. It was the perfect amount of fan service without anything being overly showy or flashy.
Yeah, doing the whole 1 year later thing right at the top of this episode, it really set us up for the idea that this is an absolute final episode. It's a look back, kind of a... where are they now? And I feel like that's an important way to close out a lot of these stories. You know, like sometimes series will end and you wonder like, well, how did their wedding go? How did this change? Did, you know, that person ever do that thing? And in this episode, we get all of that. So even at the very end, we all feel so incredibly satisfied. Like, I don't need to know anything else about any of these characters because I feel complete. And Stephen and I had mentioned that the previous episode felt like a finale. That felt like a typical sitcom finale where all, you know, everything's coming up, everybody, you know, good things are happening and, you know, we're moving forward and it feels like closure. But this is even better because we're getting that, we had that closure, like that emotional closure, but now we're seeing kind of the emotional closure from everyone because of this documentary style, the idea of a panel and the kind of like recap session like they do on even like Survivor or something, right? They have all the contestants back and like they talk about kind of behind the scenes stuff. Like, we get all of that and we get this wedding. And it's just, it's such a wonderful cap to a series that just feels right. Cause so many characters that we missed out on from the previous episode, which felt like the finale, we didn't find out about Kelly or Ryan or anyone else, or found out, you know, does Stanley have a heart attack or does he actually retire? Like, what happens, you know, like, does Creed get, you know, what happens with Creed? We know what happens with Creed now. He gets arrested.
Yeah. Never but gets like, the third chair, you know?
He never accomplished that third chair. Yeah. We get, you know, the surprise guest who I guess we'll get to, but you should have seen the show. We even get a Michael. Like, it's just so wonderfully buttoned up together that I just love seeing all of these wins and these celebrations for these characters, both for the wedding and for the celebration of completing the documentary. So
yeah,
that's where this episode's going to bring us.
So should we run through and some of the changes that have happened in the interleaving year?
Yeah, I think that's great. We open with Dwight in the car.
New car.
Oh, it's a new car?
Yeah. Yeah, his old burgundy car is gone, and he's now driving a bright orange Challenger. So,
upgrade.
Upgrade.
Super upgrade, for
sure. Super upgrade. He's talking to the camera saying they've consolidated the paper market. They regained a bunch of business that Andy lost.
Good. That was weighing on me. I know, right?
I remember having kind of anxiety about the fact that Andy was losing so much business. Mm-hmm. So stressful.
In the past year, I have consolidated the entire Scranton paper market. We regained the White Pages. The school district, Lackawanna County, we supply them all. I'm getting married tomorrow afternoon. And in the morning, there's a mini reunion, a kind of a Where Are They Now panel at a local theater. It'll be nice to see everyone again. I haven't seen Kevin since we let him go.
We also learned that some turnover has happened at Dunder Mifflin. Really the most turnover in 10 years of watching this show. Like we mentioned, Stanley is going to retire. And the same day that he retires, both Kevin and Toby are let go.
I forgot about Toby being fired.
Me too.
Well, do you think Toby was actually fired, or was that just like, you know, manager hating on Toby? Because we've known before that he works for corporate and he can't really be fired.
Yeah, but now David Wallace owns the company, and like, who, I mean, I guess there are still other branches, but we're unsure. But then Toby says he moved to New York and he has six roommates and they're better than friends. So
that's true.
Something happened here.
Yeah, something changed.
something changed. In reading online about this episode, a lot of people have questions like, how was there footage of that if the documentary crew isn't there anymore? And I don't know. I can't answer that.
I never thought about it. I guess I would say there's, you know, they want to sell a Blu-ray that has special features eventually. So they probably came back in a few times to get some behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, during like significant conference room meetings, I could see them being like, hey, let us know if, you know, you're doing anything.
Yeah.
And they come in and film a couple little things.
I kind of saw the 1 year later as part of what the documentary film crew is doing, because everybody, you know, everybody loves
it is.
Where
yeah,
are they
so,
now?
Yeah. So we learned that they're making like a DVD set of the documentary. And so the 1 year later is like a DVD bonus. And so there is, you know, something going on with the crew being back, but yeah, there are these changes with, Kevin, Toby and Stanley. And there are some new people. Devin's back. Devin is back after being fired in season two because...
I love that.
I love that so
because,
much.
Because Creed is running from the police, and we learned that Creed was in the band The Grassroots, as Creed Bratton in real life was, so they have the only character in this show who has been merged on show and in reality is Creed. I mean, lots of people use their own first names and like that sort of thing, but... we learned that Creed in the show is Creed from real life, which is awesome. He trafficked endangered species of meat and stole, quote, weapons-grade LSD from the military. So he's on the run.
Well, he should have learned better from Dwight, because Dwight knows that if you're going to deal in exotic meats, just make it all goat so you don't actually get
yes!
in trouble.
That's, thank you. That's exact. I love that kind of callback to earlier episodes where there was trafficking of meat.
I brought in some new faces and one old. I always liked Devin. I hired him back after Creed faked his own death in the Baylor the day after the doc aired. The only person he fooled was Kevin. Then the police showed up. Turns out, Creed was in the band The Grassroots in the 1960s. During that time, the police say he sold drugs and trafficked in endangered species meat and stole weapons-grade LSD from the military.
And there are some new hires. We don't really meet many of them. We kind of see them in the background. We meet one of them named Dakota a little bit later on.
There's also a new Stanley that Phyllis is grooming
yes.
with Fudge.
Yeah.
Stanley, it's hilarious to me.
Oh, some fudge?
Oh, thanks. I love your fudge. Mm. I think I gained a couple pounds since I got here.
Oh, you can afford it.
The secret evil of Phyllis, where she's so pleased as punch that she's making a new Stanley.
Yeah, she's trying to fatten him up, you know? I think he even mentions, I've gained a couple of pounds since starting working here. So Phyllis is trying to rebuild Stanley.
And I will always love the pseudo Pennsylvania Dutch behaviors of this show. These references that are like right on the cusp of true traditions. And so we do get to see some more of that as well, given Dwight's kind of marriage rituals. But along with Creed Bratton being a menace and Phyllis making the new Stanley, Andy appears and we learn about what he has been up to, old baby wah-wah.
Yeah, sure, I'll talk about it. Why not? America's Next Acapella Sensation aired my audition, and when I started sobbing uncontrollably, apparently that struck a chord with quite a lot of people. Not a very compassionate chord. The clip went viral, as they say.
You can't just sit here and cry.
Oh, I can't so just sit here and cry! 2 million hits in the first week, and then the parodies started. One from the Philippines got 12 million hits. And the late night comedy guys had a field day with it.
Oh, come on, baby Wawa. Don't be such a baby.
And I really enjoy the interactions that everybody has with Andy because I think it's a nice microcosm of the acting skills of everyone because, and also it's, it reminds me of being in offices in years past where there maybe are one or two people who are a little volatile, a little mercurial, and the way that you approach them is so different from the way that you approach everybody else. And you could just see everybody kind of like, oh, we're just trying to handle Andy, make sure he's okay.
Hey-o!
Andy?
You're back?
Yeah. That's baby Wawa, right? Oh, my God.
Hey, man, good to see you. Yeah.
Andy.
Hey! Oh, a bear hug from my favorite Mama Grizzly.
Andy, I've been worried about you. How are you?
A little warm.
Poor Andy.
Aw.
And Andy's pulling like round two of a gotcha, although he's a little bit more humble this time. But you may remember the first time he did that where he was in he was looking for his rags to riches moment where he was in like all those clothes and embarrassing himself. So that was kind of fun to see him try this again a little bit, but at the same time do it in a way that's more like, you know what, I'm just going to let you all be fools and then you'll see. Instead of over-explaining himself and trying to get everybody to love him and that kind of thing as he did before, he has clearly grown. And as someone who, for the most part, am not a fan of the Andy Bernard character, this was like a refreshing take to see him mature a little bit.
Anytime something you do gets mocked on SNL, your life is going to change in one way or the other. So thankfully it's for the better.
Yeah, I didn't see Andy as trying to get this as a gotcha moment. I really feel like he has humbled out. He has experienced what like fame feels like, and I don't think he actually liked it. And so he's in this place where everyone thinks that he is a ticking time bomb. Everyone thinks that he is about to lose it, just like they've seen him done, just like they've seen him do in the past, and he's not like, it's not a waiting for the other shoe to drop situation. You know, he is comfortable and happy where he ended up finding himself. And it's a thing that he's just, he doesn't care if everyone realizes that or not. You know, he's not waiting for everyone else to realize this. He's just, you know, mentioning, yeah, I got this great job at Cornell. I'm actually kind of happy, you know, and everyone's just really concerned about Andy and his baby Wawa, you know, viral meme that went out after his America's Great Acapella Star audition got aired and then parodied and then auto-tuned. And so Andy's situation during this day, it's everyone sees what happened to Andy and they're expecting him to react the way he did, but really this has changed him for the better.
Hey man, how you doing? I didn't call because I figured you changed the number.
No, I didn't change the number. All good, though. Phone never rings.
I mean, when a dude punches two holes in the same wall, he's got some history, right?
Oh, boy.
So what I really like about this day is that we start off with Dwight in the car and he does his little recap and shows us the new and old faces that are around or not around anymore. And so we get kind of the lay of the land. But what we're really following, we are here this one day, or I should say this like bridge of days. So we're following Dwight into work this morning. And this is the day before his wedding, as he says, and everyone's arriving for not only the wedding, but also the reunion panel for the documentary. And this is Jim's first Gutenprunk as Dwight's bestest mensch. So we find out that Jim is the best man at Dwight's impending wedding to Angela, and that he is now put aside his cruel pranks that he has spent 12 years doing to Dwight and is only Gutenprunking. So this is his first gift to Dwight in the language of pranks, but it is only good things.
What? Oh.
Surprise!
I thought you guys couldn't come.
Yeah, but then they moved the panel to the same weekend and the doc crew paid to fly us in. It was kismet.
Kismet? Yeah, right. Pam and I came up with excuses for every other weekend. You remember my two lap band surgeries, right? Neither do I. Gutenprunk number one.
At those moments, every time we have the little pause of Gutenprunk number one, Gutenprunk number two, da da da, I always get a little teary-eyed on those moments.
Yeah.
It's so touching. You know, I remember you and I talking about this, Tiff, early on, where there were times where I kind of got tired of Jim's behavior toward Dwight, and it started to feel a little bit like bullying. Even though Dwight could be so annoying, it still just got to a place where I thought, this is a little much, and the guy clearly doesn't have, the guy being Dwight, the self-awareness that he needs to sort of understand why he's being pranked. And so to see this sort of healthier behavior play out and in a way that ultimately is, I think, mutual respect and love for one another, it's super touching. And I'm glad that they decided to sort of plan out Dwight's, they being the producers, plan out Dwight's wedding in such a way that it kind of, it encapsulates the relationship of Jim and Dwight, but it does so in a really touching and positive way.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jim's using the information he has now about Dwight for good instead of evil.
There you go. Exactly. Perfectly put.
And I would imagine, I mean, I sort of had this thought watching it, that we know that Jim has been home now for over a year with Pam, and they've been through all of this. And Jim seems like he's in a good place sort of emotionally and relationally. And I can't help but think that's spilling over into this, where he's in a good place and he doesn't want to take anything out on Dwight. And he knows what his relationship means to him. And so he wants, he wants Dwight to have something similar, and I think that's really awesome. You know, I would be less excited about this episode if Jim was a jerk, but he's not, and I think it's reasonable to understand why he's not.
And Dwight's in a better place too, right? Like, as we just said in the opening, he says all the things that he has gotten back for the company, all the accounts that he's gotten back. He's really been, like, you know, a kind of great manager. And we discussed before that he wasn't ready for that. He, you know, shot a gun in the office before last time he was interim manager. And now he was ready to be manager. He gained that maturity. And so I guess he's also now gained the respect of everybody, that they are no longer rolling their eyes at the prospect of Dwight being their boss. Now they've settled into it. It's been a year. It's obviously gone well. He hasn't painted the office completely black and gotten like Mussolini's desk or whatever the heck he had before. Like, he hasn't shot any guns off in the office. You know, he hasn't implemented some shroot bucks. Like, he isn't doing this kind of stuff anymore. He's just like working and killing it, but like still like having fun, and everyone's having a good work experience. And so I think that also speaks volumes for how Jim is, you know, treating Dwight these days and how everyone feels about each other.
Honestly, that was the one failing that I saw, is that there was not a re-implementation of shroot bucks, but you know, you can't have
maybe there are, but they, you know, it's just it's subtle.
Yeah, yeah, they're there.
Like the coconut.
They just...
Dwight has made me his bestish mensch, which is Schrute for best man. He's putting himself entirely in my hands tonight, and I know for over 12 years I've done nothing but trick and prank him. But tonight, only good surprises. Guten pranken.
This episode follows a nice linear line where we're just going through the day. And there are a couple times where a few characters branch off for like the bachelor party and the bachelorette party. But other than that, everyone's together. So we have like the work day where everyone's kind of showing up. The guys go off, a limo shows up for the bachelor party, and everyone goes off after work for the bachelorette party with Angela to the farm. And then we have the panel, and then we have the wedding, and then we have the after party. And so let's get into this bachelor party. First, we start off with his Guten Prank number two, which was a quick stop off of the itinerary for the bachelor party where Dwight gets to shoot a bazooka.
With a cigar in his mouth.
Wait, why are we stopping? Jim, this isn't on the itinerary. What?
Jim, what?
Get out.
Come on! What?
What, are you gonna whack me, Jim?
No, Dwight. You'll be doing the whacking.
A bazooka. You remembered.
Of course I did.
I mean, this looks pretty sick. Like, I would kind of, I would think I would like to do this. Yes.
I agree. Just, yeah. At first he thinks he's going to be bumped off. He's going to be killed by Jim, even though he already told Jim earlier in the episode that there would be no attempted murders, or there should be no attempted murders. And so he's worried for a second there, but then no, he gets to fire a bazooka. And it is the coolest thing. And I did have a moment going, I wonder if that was the most expensive shot in the episode.
And oh, that's a good point.
That is also a reference to an episode of The Office where Michael is showing his film and he makes, I think, Toby's head melt or explode or whatever.
Explode,
and he says,
yeah.
Most expensive shot in the film. My partner and I, whenever we're watching any show, anytime there's something that's sort of out of the ordinary, we'll like quickly turn to each other. That's the most expensive shot in the film. so I love those moments, but I did have that and go, I wonder, you know, if they did special effects there, if they did practical effects, what's going on?
I think they handed Rainn Wilson a bazooka. And he just went to town.
Maybe they did.
I don't know why, but something tells me that Steven shot a bazooka at his bachelor party.
I wish. I could see that.
I feel like that happened.
He drives a truck. I could see that.
I know. He lives in the country.
One of those is true.
Private room.
Yeah, bro.
Amazing.
They go to a nice place to eat food where apparently Dwight eats too much bone marrow. It's just so many times Dwight says things and I just shake my head like, yeah, that's very Dwight. No questions. No questions from me. but we see the return of an old friend who last time we saw was getting a check, a giant check. We saw her as a nurse. Michael thought she was a nurse. She was not actually a nurse. She was an exotic dancer.
Oh, good for you going back and getting your degree.
Yeah. And so she comes back and now she's dancing for Dwight, who the whole time just thinks that she is there as a waitress and is trying to order food from her. And everybody else is just kind of laughing along in the moment.
Man, how long have we been sitting here?
Hi, boys.
Here we go.
Oh, thank God. We are famished.
Ray, did somebody order the chef special?
Right there.
Right there.
No, we haven't ordered anything. No one's even taken our drinks. What is the chef special?
I bet you boys have a big appetite.
Oh, we do. So we'll have an onion loaf for the table, please. And tell us about your heartiest soups. Now, the chef's special sounded good. What is it exactly?
Oh,
hey, what are you doing? Are you giving me a taste of the chef's special? Tastes like cigarettes. That won't work. That's no good.
We also learned that Mose isn't going to be part of the bachelor party situation. And Mose has been struggling Apparently, Angela has moved out of Oscar's closet and into Dwight's house, and Mose has been struggling with that. Mose can no longer sleep at the foot of Dwight's bed. You know, Michael Scott knows a lot about that. But it does set up why Mose isn't there, because Mose makes his presence known a little bit later on, because while the bachelor party is going on, we also have the bachelorette party, where we meet Angela's sister, Rachel, who I don't think we've heard about in an earlier season. Angela mentions that, like, she hasn't talked to her sister in a number of years, and that she can't even remember why. I don't know if this is the same sister.
Yeah, in my head canon, I think multiple sisters.
I think so, too. I think she has, like, six.
She seems like she would come from, yeah, from a family of lots of sisters. As a side note, I really, really love that actress and or that actor. And I did not remember that she was the one that was playing Angela's sister. So whenever I heard her voice first, because I was looking off to a different screen, and I heard her voice, and I was like, wait, is it? And I looked over. It is her. That actor, such a great choice for Angela's sister, because they do look a lot alike, but also because they just have, they can very easily have similar mannerisms, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I just find that actor delightful.
They both cheated on Ed Helms, didn't they?
Yeah, I read that on Wikipedia.
Yeah, me too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not in actor real life, in movie life.
Right. Okay, got you. I was a little concerned there for a second.
Cheated on Ed Helms' characters is what we should,
got there you go,
what
there
we
you
should
got
say. But yeah, they sort of reconnect and are doing their own, like, secret language, which she says people love it. And, like, the camera whips over. I don't think people are loving it. But we don't really have time to dwell on that, because there's a knock at the door, and they too have a stripper, but it's not who you would expect.
Dueling strippers. It's perfect.
It's not Ben Franklin, much to my sadness.
Sadly, it's not Ben Franklin.
In that would have been
knickers.
Great.
He tied a cherry stem with his mouth.
Heard you guys need some pipes fixed or cleaned or whatever.
Angela's special repairman is here.
Wait, what is this?
Shut up.
Jakey?
Mom?
Wait, what?
Oh, man.
No, just do your work. Pretend Mom's not here.
That seems inappropriate.
Give him a good show, my little entrepreneur.
Okay.
Take it off. Yeah, good song choice, Jakey. Stripper's only as good as a song.
Wow.
It is Meredith's son, Jakey. All grown up and stripping for us all.
Grown up, face, neck tattoo situation. Which, I mean, I have a lot of tattoos. The face neck area is a decision.
It absolutely. Yes.
Not one that I'm willing to make, but more power to him.
Meredith brings that up in a previous episode, something about him getting a neck tattoo.
Yeah.
Or a face tattoo, I can't remember. Yeah. But it was definitely mentioned before, and lo and behold, he shows up. No other visible tattoos except for the face and neck. That's a decision.
We see most of him because Meredith is very encouraging. Hey, you're an entrepreneur. Do your thing. Pretend I'm not here.
Pretend mommy's not here.
Oh, this is the most cringe scene. It's so awkward.
It's pretty bad.
All the characters, though, they're disgusted, but then they kind of just let it happen.
Yeah.
Because at this point, they all know. They've all been together for so long. I love Pam's line.
Yes, Pam.
Okay. Woo-hoo! Go Meredith, stripper son. Rachel, are you all right?
I don't know.
The whole time she's like questioning her own words that she's saying, but at the same time, just like, yeah, we should support this, I think.
Well, a stripper's only as good as a song, so
I was glad again to see some callbacks that we saw that kid who at one point was calling Dwight Mr. Poop, among other things, that he is, you know, he's an enterprising young lad who surprise surprise makes an appearance for this bachelorette mm-hmm. party.
I love that it's still the same actor. It's
yes.
So great.
Yeah.
We actually saw this kid grow up for the past 12 years.
I'm sure his parents, when he like signed on to be an actor when he was like, I don't know how young he is in the first episode we see him, but he's like elementary school age, I think, maybe, or maybe middle school. It's like, Okay, 6 years in the future, you're going to strip on an episode of The Office with a face tattoo. It takes a turn. It takes a turn.
Oh, my God. Wow. Be gentle, Jakey. Gentle.
Okay, if anything, this is rougher. Stop it, Meredith.
Sorry, my bad. Go ahead, Jakey.
So this is going on. Meredith decides to show Jakey how it's done by dancing all up on Angela. But then Mose comes in. A couple of times, Angela's like, hey, is the door locked? Shut the door. But Mose runs in, grabs Angela, and runs out. And while this is going on, our boys are in a limo. They're hanging out. And Jim gets a phone call from Pam saying, hey, Mose came and stole Angela. Angela's gone.
Dwight is not shocked by this
news.
He's
so excited.
He's thrilled. He's so excited.
What? Angela's been kidnapped. Phyllis left the door open and some freak came and grabbed her and fled.
Good old Mose.
They think it was Mose.
Oh, great. He's getting into the spirit of the festivities. Fantastic. He just pulled off a brout and fart.
What is that?
A ceremonial bridal kidnapping. He will take the bride and hide her at a local pub, and when I find the place, I have to buy everyone drinks. Oh, all right. Oh, Mose.
It seems like, okay, Jim's like, okay, what's the last bar you would go to in town? And they go there. And there's Mose and some other people, and they want a drink. They want Dwight to fulfill his end of the bargain.
I am here for my bride.
Well, first buy us a drink. If you want your bride, buy us a drink. If you want your bride, buy us a drink.
Very well, drink's on me. Hey! Bartender. Ah!
And he does, but that's when we get a pretty big bombshell, because this particular bar is owned by none other than Kevin.
Well, well, well.
I heard you bought a bar, Kevin.
This one.
This leads us into Guttenprank number 3, where Jim is helping Dwight bury the hatchet with Kevin.
Waste of a good hatchet.
Okay, just talk.
It's a touching moment where Dwight is going, well, either both of them are kind of reconciling. And I love that Kevin, he just wanted to know that it wasn't personal. And as soon as he learned that it wasn't personal, he was okay to find out that the reason he was fired is because he's incompetent and can't do his work and makes mistakes. All that is fine.
It was nothing personal. It's just that you were terrible at your job.
You're just saying that to make me feel better.
No, really, you were terrible at math and organization, time management, personal hygiene. Your internet searches were so filthy, we had to throw out your computer.
Is that all it was?
That's it.
Come here.
I missed you, Kevin.
I missed you.
This, I think, is another bit of evidence to suggest that Kevin is a little more clever than he lets on, because the guy was able to buy a bar and is now probably raking in some money buying a bar. And anytime he needs to sort of cleven the numbers and perhaps make some more money off of his bar, I'm sure he'll be able to do that. There's like this fan theory that Kevin is actually sort of an actual embezzler as opposed to an accidental embezzler. And I choose to believe that in my head canon.
I mean, we know he's an incredible gambler.
Yes.
That seems related.
And having a bar, that's a great way to launder money. So just do the deals on Fridays and Thirsty Thursdays, I guess. But it's good to see Dwight and him reconcile. And then, you know, the bar kind of all celebrate Dwight. But then it comes time to find Angela.
Poor Angela. Angela's not a very big human being, but they have stuffed her in the trunk of a K car, which is like this small Chrysler car from the 80s and 90s. And she is angry. There's a lot of bleeping and blurring going on in this this shot.
She's like a caged raccoon being let out. It's so funny how mad she is.
It's really good.
Oh, Mose.
What the? It's
a nice way to bring the bachelor and bachelorette party at the end together. That's what you want. You want togetherness. But there's some long-lasting effect. Well, not long-lasting. The next day, where her legs are all kind of messed up for being shoved in this car. And yeah. So we see some ramifications of that a little bit later on, which is pretty great.
So, yeah, the next morning we have the panel. This is the morning before the wedding because the wedding is at 3 o'clock. And when everyone's kind of assembled, we don't have every single person there, but we have a large representation. Stanley shows up. He's back from Florida. And we find out a little bit of what his life has been like.
Yes, I'm living in Florida now, just on the edge of the Everglades. I sit on my porch all day carving birds.
And yeah, everyone's there, but the audience is pretty empty and everyone's getting a little concerned.
Yeah, this is just like the local event hall in Scranton and people aren't there. And Andy's going to go like maybe find the manager of the event hall and like, okay, maybe we just pack this up. And I love this so much. He goes out. There's a huge crowd out there. And for the first time in over a year, Andy's not known as the crying baby guy, but they all do the Nard Dog, you know, the re-dee-dee-dee-doo thing, and are super into him as Nard Dog, and it just lifts Andy's spirit in a way that I think is nice to see.
Hey, it's Andy Bernard.
Nard Dog!
Nard Dog!
I'm getting goosebumps now, actually. I like that moment, too.
Yeah, that totally made me a little teary-eyed that, you know, the support is there for him and that fame that he was so hungry for in the last few episodes and has kind of resolved himself to not have that. Now he's just like this joke and he's trying to lay low from that. And instead, he gets that recognition of who he really is. And I think that's just... it's such a great thing. And then we see that the hall is completely filled. Like there are tons of people there and the panel it's very active. There are a lot of questions and this episode really gives us a lot of time in this. When I was watching it, I was really surprised of how much of the episode took place in the panel. And that was actually really good. I think that this is one of those moments, like in the beginning, I was saying that this is our farewell. This is our goodbye. This is our, you know, reunion show, not only for us to be watching, but also for us to be experiencing. And that's exactly what this panel gave us. There were a few questions. Some people asked, like, what was in the teapot note? Pam graciously says that she would like to keep that private. But we hear a lot of questions exactly like we would have heard if this were an actual panel.
But what did it say? we're moving on. I agree. I think that this was an opportunity to address maybe some of the heavier stuff in a way that felt realistic. Because if you hear Jim and Pam talking to one another about kind of what has happened, it doesn't have that same effect as the people kind of getting to ask. And you see this. So it sort of plays out slowly until it all just kind of comes falling out where people are kind of asking questions, hinting at the fact that there was some stuff going on between Jim and Pam, and Jim wanted to move and Pam really didn't want to. And Jim is sort of trying to explain his side. Pam is trying to explain her side. But then they both have these moments of kind of telling the other person, telling, you know, Jim does it to Pam, Pam does it to Jim, like, it is not on you to explain my behavior. You shouldn't have to stick up for me in this moment. I will explain what was going through my head and own up to the mistakes that I made. And then the other one does the same in return. And I think that's what you want to see, because all throughout these many seasons, they had Jim and Pam as this sort of fantasy couple with, you know, no cracks in the armor. And then they threw in some cracks. I remember watching kind of a making of episode or something like that. And the producers, the writers talking about how they did want to do that because they felt it was more realistic that they would at some point have some sort of cracks, but they almost ended up regretting it a little bit. And so they wanted to make sure that it was resolved in the end. And frankly, I think they did a good job of letting both people admit to mistakes that they made and sort of stand up for the other person as well. And then also see their partner say, you don't have to, you know, it's not on you to have to try and protect me and, you know, be defensive on my account. I will own up to what I've done and also talk about how I'm trying to do better. It was good.
One of my favorite moments in the panel was when they get a very serious question of, do you feel like your life is pointless now that no one's filming you anymore? And Toby is the one that pipes up and just says, yes.
The only one.
And that's so, it.
Oh, it's so quiet after he says that. Oh.
Next question, please.
Do you find that your life feels pointless now that nobody's actually filming you anymore?
Yes.
What I really like, they all answer as themselves. And there, it's not like we're watching the actors answering questions. We're watching these actual people who happen to be filmed answering questions. I just, the levels of meta we have going on here, because I'm sure these actors have been involved with panels like this before, or maybe, you know, that they can't act as themselves. They have to be acting as their acting parts, but they're acting like they're not acting. I just think it's just really, really fun way to think about all of these people together, and just a great way to see them react to the fame, to react to the idea of an everyday person gaining fame in even this minor way. It's just really cool.
There are a couple of other things I want to point out in the panel. We have a woman number two, who says Jim would have a free pass to do anything.
Oh.
She was his, which is the second most cringeworthy part of this episode.
All I can say is, if I had Jim, he would have a free pass to do anything. I mean, if I looked into that, he could do anything. Anything.
I'm sorry, is there a question?
No.
I feel like she also writes to prisoners, you know, like love letters to like serial killers.
Prison
She's that
vibes.
Kind of person.
Yes. Yeah,
she wrote a letter to the Strangler, for sure.
Oh my God.
Take my breath away. Take my breath away. And then the fourth woman who we see, who has questions about Jim and Pam, and then ultimately compares their story to Harry Potter, is actually Jenny Tan, who ran Office Tally, and she got to be in the finale.
Oh, that's so neat.
I read an interview with her about it, and she commented that it was very strange because she was playing basically herself as like a fan of the documentary, but talking to Jim and Pam in character, and how that was like really neat to be a part of. And I love that little bit of fan service in this episode, because I mean, I remember when the show was airing, like you'd watch the episode and then I'd go to Office Tally and see what people thought of it, right? It was such a huge hub for this show. Because really, I mean, it ended in 2013, but especially in the earlier seasons, it's before a lot of social media or the very beginnings of social media. And so Office Tally really was the kind of community hangout spot for Office fans. And I think it was really cool that she got to be a part of it.
That is amazing. I didn't realize that, because I will say I remember, and I don't want to make anyone feel old here, but I remember going to school and hearing people talking about The Office, but at the time, it was just not a show that I watched. So I didn't come in, I didn't start watching the, I wanted to avoid it. That's what she said there. I didn't start watching The Office.
No avoiding it.
Until high school. And I remember it was actually like it was a snow day. And I was over at a friend's house. And in Missouri, when we say snow days, we mean you've got so much snow that you're not moving anywhere. We were stuck inside, and so my friend's dad had like a projection screen and a projector, and my friend's cousin was there, and she introduced us to The Office. And I remember we were just watching through episode after episode after episode all day. And so I didn't tune into it until later. So I didn't have that experience of going and reading about what other people thought about it, because the episodes had long been out. So I had no idea that that's who that was. That is a fun moment to get to hear about.
A couple other little cameos that we get from the panel before we wrap this part up. We have Joan Cusack showing up to the mic, and we have a beautiful, touching moment. I teared up of that Erin meets her birth mother. And at first in the conversation, she doesn't get it. Everyone else gets it before she gets it. And she has a very emotional reunion with her birth mother and her birth father.
I have a question for Erin.
Really?
Yes. The thing I found most compelling about the documentary was your search for your birth mother.
Thank you.
So my question is, don't you hate her? I mean, I would just imagine that you were so angry at her that you would hate her.
Maybe sometimes, but not like hate. More just like, Mom, I hate you. And then she would say, go to your room, young lady. And I'd stamp my foot and run upstairs. And I have a room, which is really cool. And then we'd just have dinner together. But I don't know. I'd have to meet her. Thanks.
I really like that that we got that closure for Erin in this.
And that little cut to Phyllis, who was going to kind of offer to be her adopted mother, was also a sweet moment where you can tell
totally.
She's so happy for her. And I'm so glad. And that it's Joan Cusack is fantastic, because it makes sense. Ellie Kemper, yeah, Joan Cusack makes sense.
One last thing that I want to point out is at the end, when they wrap things up after the beautiful reunion with Erin, we get a shot of the audience, and right in the middle is a very beardy Creed. I love it.
Yeah, the camera spots him. I don't think anyone else does, but the camera sees him, and we get this like long zoom in on him, which is just fantastic.
And he's pretty emotional. It's so cute.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if his parents see it, he's dead.
So after the panel, everyone heads on over to the wedding, this long-awaited event, and we see people arriving with cats as gifts, which I think that's a great touch. And then we have the camera seeing some shots of both the bride and groom getting ready. But what's the most important part here is while Dwight is getting ready, Jim tells him that he has some awful, awful news, that the bestest mensch needs to be older than him, that the minister told him he can't be his bestest mensch. And Dwight is so upset. He's like, I've never heard of this rule. How could this be? It doesn't really matter. He's trying to make any excuse because he really wanted Jim there. But Jim has a guten Brunk up his sleeve for this very moment.
Dwight, I can't be there for you. I'm sorry.
Jim.
I just really wish there was something I could do.
Michael. I can't believe you came.
That's what she said. Best prank ever.
The best Guten Prank in the history of Guten Pranks, which is that, yes, Jim has found a person who is older than Dwight to be there to be the bestest mensch. And who other than a gray-haired Steve Carell, a.k.a. Michael Scott, who is there to be the bestest mensch?
It's such a wonderful moment. Dwight is so incredibly overwhelmed with emotion to see Michael there for him on this day. And I don't know about you, but it's just like when Steve Carell showed up, first of all, it was a huge secret. Like, it was a secret from the network. It was a secret from like everyone. They filmed like alternative scenes so that no one would get wind of it. There was even interviews with Steve Carell saying that, like, no, he wouldn't be back, like out and out lies just to cover this up. And when I first saw this, I thought it was very strange of how quiet Michael was and standoffish. That was like, he's not acting like Michael. Mm-hmm. And when I read some information about this, it's like, it states that Steve Carell had this idea that Michael was finished with that part of his life and he wasn't interested in being on camera anymore. So he was a little shyer about that. But he did say that, like, I do believe that Michael would go back, but he would also not be that interested in being like the center of attention or taking attention away from Dwight's wedding. Also, on top of this, there are laws when it comes to being a, you know, union actor in the Screen Actors Guild and in Equity and everything. And if you have more than two lines, you have to have like a credited byline, or there's different statuses in your contract.
Oh,
and so they only have him. Yeah. So they only have Steve Carell doing two lines in order to skirt under these requirements for him to just like kind of be this quick appearance, as opposed to getting, not that they didn't want him to get more billing, but it just got more complicated. And so that's why he only says like two things in the entire episode.
Can I tell you, I will be honest that this whole time I've been cynical about this, these episodes. I thought that this is so bad. I really thought he was getting paid per word. So they just cut down on the words that he said. And I was kind of bummed in my head going, oh man, he must have really charged them quite a bit of money. And so they just gave him a few words, but that makes so much more sense. And I like it so much more than my horribly cynical thought.
So yeah, so that actually made me think about this episode a little bit, like now that you know, like I feel better about this episode knowing that there is a lot more behind the scenes hoops that they had to jump through in order to pull off this episode with Steve Carell at all. And so I forgive him, but the two lines they gave him were pretty great, so exactly. I gotta say I'm happy with the two that they've chosen.
I feel like all my kids grew up and then they married each other. It's every parent's dream.
And I think that it mostly works. I mean, the show has not been about Michael Scott in a long time. And bringing him in and making this the Michael Scott episode, I think would do a disservice to the other characters that we've come to know and love in the years since. And so I'm honestly mostly okay with how this goes.
That makes me curious, though. You said mostly okay. Which, did you also not like that he was pretty quiet, or was there something else that kind of rubbed you the wrong way?
I would have liked to know a little bit more about his life, but that's a pretty small complaint. I mean, we learn from Pam, who I guess talks to him, and then we learn mostly about his life from Pam that, you know, he and Holly have kids and he's got two phones, and there's this cute line about he's so happy to have a family plan. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess we know the highlights, but I would like to know a little bit more, but not at the expense of the rest of the story. And so like I said, pretty okay with it.
I would have loved to see him enter like that, but then also see him at the party with Holly and some kids, like to see him being a husband and dad, like even if it's just in the background. I was really hungry for that in this episode, and I didn't get it, you know, like because he and you could explain that away, be like, oh, Holly had to stay with the kids so he could travel and do this like quick thing. But I really would have, that would have been chef's kiss to me to cap off the, you know, where is Michael now? Mm-hmm. And I would have just loved to see that. Instead, we do get that scene with him at the table showing Pam all the pictures and then her talking head explaining what happened.
And we get the tag at the very end of the episode of him and Dwight just dancing like maniacs at the reception. Yes. And so we do know that he's still sort of the same Michael Scott.
Yeah, he just didn't want to be on camera with it, which is, I like his interpretation.
So we have a couple other characters showing up to the wedding that we haven't seen either at the panel or back at the office. But it's Kelly is there with her handsome boyfriend, Ravi, who I'm assuming they're still just dating because they don't mention anything more than that unless I missed it. And also Ryan shows up with a baby. And so now we have this crazy situation of Kelly and Ryan reconnecting and some messed up stuff goes down.
Yeah, it's got to be chaos with those two. There's no other way.
sloppy chaos.
Yes, exactly. I don't know what she's thinking. I mean, if you... what?
She's an addict. She's a Ryan addict.
Perfect. I mean, that's what it is because, yeah. What a gal and what a guy, because he orchestrates the opportunity for the two to talk to one another.
By poisoning his baby,
quite literally poisoning his baby through an allergic reaction.
I don't know, Ryan. Maybe Drake didn't look so good.
He'll be fine. I let him suck on a strawberry. He's allergic, but he'll get over it fast. I had to talk to you.
You gave your baby an allergic reaction just to talk to me?
Oh, those two. We don't see really any growth from them, do we?
No. We just see the dust that they kick up as they run from the reception to run off together.
I love you.
I love you too.
We're going to be together forever.
We're running off into the sunset.
I finally mastered commitment.
Kelly's boyfriend, Ravi, comes back with the baby looking for where Ryan is and just... he has given up. He finds out that Kelly kind of ran away with Ryan and left him at this wedding with this baby. He hands the baby over to Kevin. And this is where Nelly gets the opportunity to say to Kevin that, hey, I can help you out with that baby problem that you found yourself in. Because as we know, Nelly has been looking to become a mother for basically the entire time that we've known her. And so this is finally her opportunity. And I really love this for Nelly. It's really very sweet.
By kidnapping?
I mean, if she can somehow get the child out of the United States to Europe, that would be something. Yes, Nelly Bertram.
I mean, it is a kidnapping, but like the baby was already kind of abandoned.
A kid saving?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really even Ryan's baby. It was just a baby from a girlfriend that she abandoned. And...
oh, boy. I guess it's maybe, I don't even know what one does in that situation if you just find a baby somewhere. I mean, well, I know what I would do.
Well, if you want to keep it and you're a good person, you just forge some documents and you move on with your life.
I do not condone this behavior.
I mean, if you're a good person, I don't mind.
Okay, you heard it here, folks. You can quote Tiff as precedent in any legal...
Please don't send me your unwanted babies.
If Ryan wants his baby back, please tell him where to find me. We'll be somewhere in Europe. Won't we?
We should talk about, like, the actual wedding.
There is a very, this is a well-known Schrute tradition that has, I remember it being referenced in the past, which is that the bride and groom at their marriage ceremony actually have to stand in their own graves, which is incredibly grim. But as I believe it's Nelly who points it out, it is kind of, these graves are rather shallow. Those are not 6 feet deep.
As is traditional to the Schrutes, the lovers are standing in their own graves as a reminder that this is the only escape from what they are about to do.
You see, I get what they're trying to do, but why are the graves so shallow?
That line made me laugh out loud.
Look, Angela's not a very big person.
So. That's true. She'd be okay. But by the way, because of her being stuffed in a trunk, she gets walked down the aisle on Phyllis's back. Phyllis actually lets her piggyback down the aisle. And that was a fun moment, too. A very touching moment where Phyllis is like, you're getting down that aisle. I'll make sure of it. And so she lets her ride on her back. Oh, so sweet.
I like the sentiment behind that, but I found it a little weird. I think I would have liked just more of the traditional.
Me too.
Like Angela gets to the aisle on her own. That threw me off. Like I liked the emotion behind it, that like Phyllis is actually helping out Angela after like years of animosity between them, especially between the party planning committee and everything, and Phyllis knowing secrets about Angela. So it was a nice way that we saw Phyllis kind of forgive Angela for being a total B for 1,000 years. But like that, I don't know. It was just it was a little weird for me. But yet, though, standing in the grave makes sense. So I'm okay with that part. I don't know. It's all subjective.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. We get a nice moment of Mo's looking longingly at a scarecrow during the ceremony.
Yeah, so, that's a nice callback.
It's you know, did some things with the scarecrow, but
his lady scarecrow.
Lady scarecrow.
There are a few moments like that as the two are getting married, and we even have as this is kind of going on, they are cutting away to some different moments. Again, Dwight or Mo's looking at the scarecrow, but also Phyllis being excited about the arrival of Stanley at the wedding, where she pulls out a sculpture or a carving of her that Stanley has done, where the top half of the carving is Phyllis and the bottom half of the carving is a bird, because he's been carving wooden birds. And so he makes Phyllis into a bird, and it is creepy and amazing.
Lots of people think that Stanley Hudson's a mean old grump. But would a grump make this? It's me. It's me.
There's so many nice moments during this wedding. I really like how they did it. They kept the ceremony pretty sweet. And then we have Angela and Dwight's first dance, which is... a song called Angela, and I don't know if that's actually the title, but that's mostly the lyrics. I didn't know the song before this. Did anyone else know the song? It seems like a regular song.
Yeah, I've heard it. It's by Motley Crue, I believe, and good first song. And I like that Dwight is basically picking her up the whole time because she's short, and I guess her legs hurt both. So, got both covered.
Yeah, Motley Crue, that tracks for Dwight since he's all do-do-do-do-do-do.
headbanging and stuff.
So after the wedding, I think we've covered the wedding pretty well, but right?
Yeah,
I think so.
So after the wedding, we see a quick scene of Jim and Pam stopping off at their house. They're going to change because, as we find out, as everyone's leaving the wedding, we also get a little bit of Val. Val's still there, so we see her. She attended the wedding. There's going to be a big after party in the warehouse for the documentary. And so everyone's planning on heading out there because the wedding, it ended, it was about 6 o'clock or 6:30, whatever time it was. So we're actually getting these really clear timestamps for the entire day. But before they head over there, Jim and Pam are going home to change, and they run into another character that we haven't seen in a while. And it's Carol. Carol is coming out of their house. She, if you remember, is the real estate agent that sold Michael his condo and that Michael dated for a little while, and also Steve Carell's real wife. And she's showing the house. And this is a huge surprise, and we get a reveal from Pam that she has been showing the house for a few months, and we find a little bit about their plans. Well, about Pam's secret plans, which she hinted to during the panel just that morning.
I just thought if I could get us an offer, then there wouldn't be anything standing in our way, and I could come to you with this big Jim gesture and show you all at once just how much I love you. And how much I really do believe in your future.
Sorry, how long have you been showing the house?
About 2 months.
That's why it's so clean.
Yeah.
I mean, you were gonna do this without me?
Well, you bought the house without telling me, so I thought I could sell it without telling you.
Oh, okay. Where would we go?
Austin, maybe?
I promise you. You don't have to do this for me.
I'm doing it for us.
They're going to be leaving. If the house can be sold, then they can go live out Jim's dreams because they both feel very secure in their relationship. I think that's, you know, played a role in it. And it is now a time where, given that security and that desire for, you know, new and next, they are going to explore. I guess, is it Austin where Athleep mm-hmm. is now?
Yeah. Yep. Gonna go to Austin. And I like that Jim's like, I promise you don't have to do this for me. Like, he is really trying to keep up the work that they have done, but it's something that Pam wants to do. And I love her line about, you bought the house without telling me, so I can sell it without telling you. I thought that was very good. And it's a nice moment, because they make this big decision, and like, they're talking, and the people are like, yes, we'll buy the house. And it's all set in motion very quickly, but I like that that's where the Halperts are going to end up.
Yeah, it's nice that Pam is now ready. You know, she has had time to really digest, like, what's going on, like, the idea of this job. I think before, a lot of the panic came from, there's just not enough time. Like, the idea of change and move, like, as we hear from her talking head on the second half of this episode, that she takes a lot of time to do things, which is one of the things that, watching the documentary, she said that was frustrating to her. And I don't think that, you know, I think that that's like part of who this character is, and that, like, you know, she needed some time to come to the conclusion and the idea that, like, this change is something that she might want to do. And she's had that time. She's been given, you know, the distance, and Jim has given her that space to do that. And so now that she's ready, like, they're going to take this leap. And we heard earlier from Daryl that everything has just been going so well. They changed the horrible name from Athlete to Athleep. Is it leap, like, as in jump, or leet, as in, like, you're leet?
I think leap is in jump.
Leap with a P. Athleep.
Okay. I liked athlete better.
That's good.
Like L-E-E-T. You know, with the threes, oh, backward, yeah. Three. The threes instead of the E's. That'd be sweet. But anyway, so yeah, like, it's really great seeing that we hear from Daryl, like, how well things are going. I mean, he arrives and he takes a private car. He's not waiting in the taxi line with Andy, that he's loving Austin. Pam plays it cool when she hears this from Daryl in the beginning, because I have a feeling she has been in communication with Daryl for a while, and she's possibly doing some back channeling with Jim's business partners over in Athleep. And so this has all been arranged now, and so we have a new journey for Jim and Pam. And I like where this is, because I don't need to see any more of this. Needed to know that they were gonna go, and that's where they're headed, and that's all I need. And I think that is a really great, wonderful, like, moving forward together that we're seeing from Jim and Pam.
Agreed. Yeah. We can, they tied the bow on that, and it's fine.
So they end up going over to Dunder Mifflin after the scene at the house. And there's a big sort of rat party in the warehouse. I like that there's PBS merch and they have to pay for it. Like, they're not allowed to have it. Stanley buys a tote bag with his face on it.
Cool. Oh, that's for PBS executives only.
I had to pledge $50 to my local PBS station just to get this.
And Pam unveils her mural. And so she has finished the mural in the warehouse. Remember, it had butts painted on it, so it got redone. And it's a painting of all of the main cast, the main Dunder Mifflin crew. And it's really nice. And she's like, hey, let's take a picture. And people don't understand. And, like, everyone like, who is at the party is there. Greg Daniels is in this shot, the creator of the show, which is a really nice touch. And I like that the Dunder Mifflin people are kind of, at least a couple of them are kind of over this. Like, Stanley and Phyllis and a few others kind of look like they're just ready to move on with their lives. Like, okay, let's stop taking pictures. Let's close this chapter.
They also feel like they're getting taken over by these, like, executives and randos that really have not much to do with the show, at least on their perspective. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, getting to be a little much. It's not so much about them. It's more about, like, the PBS people.
Yeah. Yeah, people they probably have never met, honestly. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to sneak up upstairs and kind of have a one last kind of around the bullpen, you know, saying goodbye type thing.
And I love that they do that. I can remember when there would be office parties and there was kind of a group of people who spent most of their time in the office that we were. And then there were people, typically executives, who spent most of their time either traveling or just not in the office at all. And you do kind of, like, let's just go over to one of the areas that we, you know, are actually work in, where we're comfortable, and hang out. And it's just us. That's what we want. That is a much better feeling. And they all kind of fall into their old roles a little bit as the phone rings and Pam answers it.
Dunder Mifflin, this is Pam. Oh, I'm sorry. Jim Halpert doesn't work here anymore.
For me, it was kind of, I was almost goosebumpy moment, because it's just a throwback to so much of the time that Pam has spent there. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I liked that kind of moment. That's a return to normalcy, but there's also a, it didn't feel fake or anything like that. It's definitely something that I've experienced in the past.
There's a lot of opportunity here for reminiscing. And I really like how they not only do this for the show, but it also feels like the actors are doing this together. Like, there's a moment where Phyllis mentions to Jim, oh, remember Flonkerton? And Creed still has his medal from that. Oh, by the way, Creed's there. We find out he's living between the bathrooms.
Yeah, he's been living in Ryan's old office.
Oh, true.
So, yeah, I really like that they take that moment to, they're all together. They all realize that this is probably the last time that they're all going to be together like this. And not only do we have, you know, Jim and Pam telling Dwight that they're kind of going to be leaving, we have Daryl finding Andy's speech. Like, there's a lot of movement happening, even in this, like, little reminiscing moment where they escape from the party and they're all just hanging out together.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey. Hey. Hey.
What about the honeymoon?
Oh, the honeymoon can wait till tomorrow. We wanted to hang out with you guys. I mean, when are we all going to be here together again?
Jade, P&D, the three amigos, warms my heart. Hey, what do you say when I get back from our honeymoon, the three of us have a conference room meeting just for fun? What is that meaningful look?
You know what? Maybe we should talk.
They go into Dwight's office to talk, and Pam's, you know, explaining that she's finally ready to make this change, that she was afraid of it, but it's time for them to quit. But as she's saying it, Dwight interrupts them and fires them. And Jim's like, hey, man, like, we're all having good vibes here. You know, we've had an amazing weekend. We're all on good terms. Like, don't ruin it here at the end. And Dwight says, no, I'm not angry. I'm firing you so you can get severance. And apparently it's a month's worth of pay for every year they've been there. So they're going to have a pretty nice runway between selling their house and moving to Austin. And Athleep is successful. And so Dwight really takes care of them. And it's kind of, to me, this is the biggest sign that Dwight has grown up and evolved, because Dwight of previous seasons would never fire them just so he could give them severance, right? He would do the opposite. He would let them quit. He would not give them money out the door. But he's trying to take care of them, and I really love it.
We'll come back to visit, but I think it's time for us to officially...
No, don't say it. You're fired. Okay. You're both fired.
Dwight, come on. Don't end on a bad note.
Don't be an idiot. It's for the severance. The best that I can do is 1 month for every year you've been here. That's the max.
Thanks, Dwight.
Hey, and if you're ever in Austin...
Oh, right. For what? The art, the music, the incredible nightlife? No, thank you. But if you're ever in the area, you'll always have a place to stay. In my barn.
There it is.
I'm getting a little weepy because I'm thinking about how he calls Pam his best friend. Mm-hmm. That's so sweet.
All the talking heads in this section are really great. It's a lot of reminiscing. It's a lot of, you know, looking back at the way time has changed them and how amazing it was to be a part of this documentary. Pam's in particular, she says, you know, like, she couldn't watch it because she was very frustrated with past Pam and taking her so long to get to Jim, where he was only a few feet away, but it took her years to get there. And we have a lot of these moments overlaid with clips. And this did not give me Clip Show vibes. I think they did this really well, because we have all those voiceovers. We have the beautiful song that Creed is playing at the same time. So we have, you know, that melodic guitar underneath a lot of these these moments and these sentiments. And it just all really comes together in this great way. And Dwight's sentiment where it still remains so Dwight, where he's asked, you know, does he get along with his coworkers? And he says, no, I don't have coworkers. I have subordinates. Mm-hmm. But yet he then goes through and, you know, references almost everybody and then says what they mean to him and what role they now play in his life as, you know, this new manager and how complete he feels. And I think that that's what everyone's kind of expressing is their feeling of satisfaction, of completion, of maturity, of, you know, for Jim and Pam, ready to move on and you know, go to a different place and start a new chapter of their life. For people looking back and being satisfied with, like, everything that they've done and accomplished. And I think that that is the exact feeling that us as the audience needed to feel in order to let the show go. Mm-hmm. Because we've all become so endeared with the show that we needed something to say a proper goodbye. Otherwise, I feel like it would be too great of a... You would feel more... Like, you would feel like you were mourning something. You know? Like, yeah. It would feel like a loss.
Yeah.
And this episode and these scenes in particular of them up in the office really gently let us say goodbye.
Do I get along with my coworkers? Well, first of all, I don't have coworkers anymore. I have subordinates. So... Have I gotten along with my subordinates? Let's see. My supplier relations rep, Meredith Palmer, is the only person I know who knows how to properly headbang to Motorhead. Oscar Martinez, my accountant, is now godfather to my son. Angela Schrute, my former accountant, is now my wife. My top salesman, Jim Halpert, was best man at my wedding. And office administrator, Pamela Beasley Halpert, is my best friend. So, yes. I'd say I have gotten along with my subordinates.
I really love Andy's comment. This is a very famous scene from this episode where he talks about when he was working at Dunder Mifflin, all he could think about was his old a cappella group and kind of the glory days when he was at Cornell. They called him Buzz. And while he's now has his dream job, he's at Cornell. Now he just thinks about his times at Dunder Mifflin. And he just has this amazing line, I wish there was a way to know you're in the good old days before you've actually left them. And just, I mean, this episode is already like tugging on the heartstrings, but that line in particular, not because it's from Andy, because Andy's not my favorite character by any stretch, but that feeling is universal, right? When you look through old photos or, you know, we're in the holiday season now, like I've been seeing people I went to high school with or college with, because I still live in our hometown and people come back for the holidays. Like you know, we all feel that in one way or the other. And I think that's what makes it so impactful.
I spent so much of my time here at Dunder Mifflin thinking about my old pals, my college a cappella group. The weird thing is now I'm exactly where I want to be. I got my dream job at Cornell. And I'm still just thinking about my old pals. Only now they're the ones I made here. I wish there was a way to know you're in the good old days before you've actually left them. Someone should write a song about that.
Whew, man.
Yeah. I cried a lot during the end of this episode. I really did. I thought it was funny that they kind of ended with Creed getting arrested.
Yes, let's go.
Like that was a little comedy relief there. In addition to, like you said, they had that little end scene where we flash back to the wedding, a couple clips of the wedding and Steve Carell dancing with Rainn Wilson, which is mm-hmm. really great.
Yeah.
I saw Creed perform not too long ago in Berkeley, I think it was, and he was talking about how they knew much earlier on that he could play instruments quite well and also sing, and they kind of kept looking for different opportunities for him to do that, and him playing that song at the end was not originally part of the script. But they decided to add it because they thought it was such a nice sort of cap on things and for that music to be playing while everything else plays out as well. And he then performed the song, and there were many non-dry eyes in the audience that night as he was playing the song. It was pretty cool.
I saw a friend today, it had been a while, and we forgot each other's names. But it didn't matter, 'cause deep inside the feeling still remained the same.
Imagine going back and watching a tape of your life. You could see yourself change and make mistakes and grow up. You could watch yourself fall in love, watch yourself become a husband, become a father. You guys gave that to me. And that's an amazing gift.
Hey, Jim, remember Flonkerton when you did Office Olympics? It was awesome.
Thanks, Phil.
I still have my medal from that.
Do you even have a mattress?
No, but I still have my medal from that.
It's so good. And it's a big, like, this whole little section of the episode is such a big break from The Office stylistically, because it's not very often that we have, like, music under what's happening on the show. It happens because music is happening in the world, mm-hmm. but not really, like, in the edit, if that makes sense. And it definitely adds to the sort of emotional feelings of this. And I absolutely love how it's put together. And we have all these, you know, everyone reflecting. We have Jim telling the crew, you know, hey, because of you, I've been able to see myself grow up. And you guys, being the crew, gave that to me. And we've gotten the sense, especially over the last couple seasons, that Jim is tight with some of the documentary crew. And so that's a nice nod. And, you know, other people kind of mention, you know, what it was like to see themselves. And Aaron asks how cameras work. So there's that.
How did you do it? How did you capture what it was really like? How we felt and how we made each other laugh and how we got through the day. How did you do it? Also, how do cameras work?
It's really special and it's really sweet, but still grounded in the reality that is this show. Like you said, Tiff, that, you know, these people feel this sense of completion or maturity and change. And so even though the finale is for us, the audience, it is still very much part of the story of these characters, right? That they are all moving on from this chapter. And it's just, I mean, I watched this end section twice because it's just so good.
It all seems so very arbitrary. I applied for a job at this company because they were hiring. I took a desk at the back because it was empty. But no matter how you get there or where you end up, human beings have this miraculous gift to make that place home. Do this.
Oh, I think we've covered the whole thing. That's our finale episode. I can't help but think about this AJR song called Netflix Trip, which chronicles, I'm gonna like get weepy just talking about this song. It always just hits me right in the heart. And like, it chronicles the narrator in the song, their life and things that happened in their life and how they used watching The Office as a coping mechanism for different parts of their life. So like something really sad would happen and then they remember like the episode that they watched in correlation with that. And one of the lines in the song is, "So don't you tell me it's just a show." And that's really what I feel like when I think about this show, is that it just gets me. I don't know, like, it's my favorite show for a reason, and I'm so happy to have been able to do this podcast, like, from start to finish, like, all these episodes, talking about all of this, sharing this with, like, my two friends, you two, and our audience, and it's just, like, so much about this show, about these characters. Yeah, it's just a show, but it's not just a show for people who emotionally connect with it, and that's exactly what all these, like, super fans, what happens. And I mean, so yeah, so, you know, it's not just a show. It's not just a show to a lot of us. And I think that the actors and people who have done the show, it's not just a show to them either. It really became so much more.
I think that's reflected a little bit in what Jim and Pam say, because Pam does have the last word in this episode, which I think is great. But Jim repeats his line from season one, I think, about how he calls clients and sells paper. And then Pam makes this comment about how she thought it was weird that they were chosen for a documentary. But over the years, she's come to discover that there is beauty in ordinary things. And that's the point. And she says this as she's taking her painting off the wall, which, again, is really awesome, and I love it. And I think that groundedness that Pam brings to these closing moments of all of our favorite TV show, I mean, I'm projecting, I guess, but I think that that's one reason the show is so good, is that Pam puts her finger on, okay, like, ordinary life that you just do day in and day out, that's what's important, that's what matters. She's learned that, I think, especially over the previous couple years with Jim. And that's why the show is so good. And that's why and I think it's why the show holds up so well. You know, this show's been off the air for 9 years, and almost 10. And in rewatching it, yes, there's things that haven't aged well. Yes, there are things that have been cut for streaming because they shouldn't have done it then, but definitely not now in the world that we live in, as we all evolve and understand each other better. But my favorite moments on this TV show are those ordinary small things. And the show was so good at displaying those. And not every episode is this big over the top thing, right? Some of the best episodes are just the mundane life of people working in this office, and capturing that and then putting sort of a point on it here at the very end is just masterfully done.
I sold paper at this company for 12 years. My job was to speak to clients on the phone about quantities and types of copy or paper. Even if I didn't love every minute of it, everything I have, I owe to this job. This stupid, wonderful, boring, amazing job.
I thought it was weird when you picked us to make a documentary. But all in all, I think an ordinary paper company like Dunder Mifflin was a great subject for a documentary. There's a lot of beauty in ordinary things. Isn't that kind of the point?
I want to reiterate, Tiff, what you were talking about especially people kind of connecting over the show. First, I am so happy that you reached out when you did, and said, bro, you're taking forever to make this thing happen. You didn't say it in this way. You were very kind, but I'm glad that, you know, it was that moment for me to go, oh, right, I said I was going to do this thing, never did this thing, and now I get to do it with Tiff. That's going to be fantastic. And I'm so glad that we did that. And you know, my partner and I bonded over The Office in the first place. It was, you know, one of the first things that we talked about, one of the first things I knew he was interested in. And so we had that to kind of kick things off. And I think about all of the people I know who have said in the past, it's a lot of people who, I don't know how they do it, but they can't fall asleep without the TV on. I have to have the room dark, but they have the TV on. And so many of them will just play The Office in the background. And so it becomes this sort of ambient enjoyment that they have. And so many people watching the show wherever they can find it, and now going back and rewatching the episodes that are, I think, on Peacock that have some of the deleted scenes in them as well, has been such a joy and a pleasure. And you just, there's so many stories that thread throughout this whole thing that are just amazing, and the comedy continues to be funny, and you find new things every time you watch it, and you see new reactions every time you watch it. And the mockumentary style is, I think, a tough one to pull off, and for them to do it in the way that they did and to just come together and make it happen, it's incredible. And congratulations to the two of you as well for coming together and making all of this happen. And thank you for having me on for this final episode.
Well, I think it's time for all of us to say goodbye to not only this series, because we've covered every episode, we did it all, but also our podcast. This is it, gang. It's closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Maybe we just go watch the pilot.
Now the finale's done and I'm alone. I'm on a Netflix trip here on my phone. But who I am is in these episodes. So don't you tell me that it's just a show.